Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. Cold enough for you? Roger, how can you even read that report?
My lips were chapped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was quivering in here because,
I'm kind of just tired talking about the weather. It's just boring. It's just the same old thing. It gets a little warmer and then it gets cold again. I'm not talking about the weather until it's warm. How's that?
Well, that's fine. I'll talk about it for you.
Please do.
Don't listen to it, though.
No. And I don't believe that little rodent either. That rodent said we're going to get
it
in the spring.
He lied.
Mm-mm. Not doing
it. Can we bring him up on charges?
We should. Fraud. Yeah. Fraud and the inducement.
There you go.
I started culling my winter boots for my sandals. I think I jumped the...
I think so.
Yeah, I jumped it there.
Okay.
Well, tonight we have a great show. I think it's always great, but we have one of the funniest guys in Chicago who's going to join me for the first hour. I'm going to introduce him in a minute, but normally we take calls at 8 o'clock, legal calls of any type or calls about maybe some of the topics you've been hearing about, the Jussie Smollett case, the Robert Kraft case, and of course the R. Kelly case. So many of them having connections to Chicago. Give me a call here and we'd be happy to entertain any questions. If you'd like me to explain bail, if you'd like me to explain the charges, how to defend the cases, what my thoughts are and about how the lawyers are going to prepare these cases, I'd be happy to talk to you about that. And the number here is 312-981-7200. But the first hour, we're just going to mess around. And with me to mess around is, again, one of my favorite people in the whole city, Kevin Bozeman. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, Kevin is a native of Chicago. He is performing stand-up in clubs all across the country. He's making a living, making people laugh, which is a great thing to do.
Right? It is a giant hustle.
It's a giant hustle.
I'm always just like, yo, let me play your spot. I'll do well. People will come and see me. And they're like, hey.
You have to beat your own drum all the time. And then you have to meet and exceed those expectations.
Yes. Those are two things you have to do. You always have to promote yourself. And then you always have to live up to the promotion that you give. You can't. Because a lot of times, a lot of these club owners, honestly, are so lazy. They don't come and watch every show. If I had a club and I had 5-6 shows, I'm there 4 shows. I'm like watching to see
quality control.
Right.
Yeah.
To make sure like this is what I want. Like I'm not gonna go and watch for 15 minutes because a live show, you don't know what you're gonna get.
Right.
Like you don't know, like maybe the crowd is really intoxicated and you're dealing with a rowdy crowd. Maybe it's a late show Friday night. Everyone's tired, so you got to do a different
drinking
spiel.
Too much, whatever.
So
serving
you put
food,
your...
that's another one. People serving food sometimes.
Right. Which is the worst.
It's the worst. It gets in the way of the visual. It's distracting.
You can't laugh eating the steak. You just can't. You cannot laugh. Oh, that was a good joke. Like that's like I want to choke someone out with a joke, and then that's going to be my credits. Like I'm not going to even mention my TV credits. I mean, like he wants to kill someone. He wants to kill someone with one of his jokes as they was eating a steak. And Kevin Bozeman.
Kevin Bozeman. Heimlich maneuver. Kevin Bozeman. Going to Google it. It's going to be
Kevin the Heimlich maneuver. Bozeman.
But the other thing about comedy is you're always hustling, right? You're always promoting yourself. You have to meet and exceed. And nothing is really in your control. I mean, you can get the lay of the land, but if people don't show up, if people are drinking too much, or people are talking.
The weather.
How, it's just things outside of your control. Can you say to yourself, if I have the right conditions, I can make people laugh? Do you feel that confidence when you walk into a room?
I feel like now I kind of like when the conditions are a little off.
Oh, you do?
Now I do. It's just like, it's just like the test. It's like the next level up. Like you're playing a video game. Like it's the next level. Like, all right, give me something a little bit.
Oh, it's the challenge.
A little bit more difficult. Like I prefer like a great crowd, but I don't mind a crowd that's like, what? Why should we laugh at you? Who are you?
You like, walk like, out and I they have their arms crossed.
Like, you could tell the wife dragged the husband out and he's sitting there like, I'm going, but I'm not going to have a good time. Like, I'm like, I don't care if anyone else laugh. I only want you to laugh.
So like, you like that challenge?
I don't mind it, like, from time to time, but sometimes it's annoying because we have a job, but sometimes we're in moods. Like, we're just like, I don't want to.
Sure.
Like, look, you paid money to see me. Why are you in such a bad mood?
I don't get that at all, right? I mean, I understand as a lawyer when people come to see me, oh, they can be in a bad mood, believe me, because they should be, because they're getting sued, they're divorcing, they're bankrupt, whatever it is. But I don't get it. If you're going out to a comedy club, like to me, I'm laughing before I get there.
Well, everyone's always offended nowadays. It's a very...
Well, that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, it's very... Like, it's... I don't... Like, I know the rules of the game now. Like, I'm not for it. Like, I believe... Some things are legit, but for the most part, I know the rules of the game, and basically, you can't punch down. You know what I'm saying?
No, what does that mean?
You can't make fun of people that you shouldn't make fun of, like handicaps or like, you know, things like that. You can't punch down anymore. Where that used to always be, you know, you punch down on people being gay, poor, whatever. Like that was like the easy laughs, and now it's just like don't. Punch down. Always have to punch up. So you have to make fun of like the well-to-do situations or make fun of yourself.
Interesting. But and I'm going to take a break. But when we come back, what I want to talk about is you do a lot of college entertainment, and you go from college to college, which is great because you must work well enough there to get the jobs.
Yeah.
But I know that that age group is extremely sensitive.
They are the most offensive.
I have people at the workplace that I have to just retool my whole way of thinking because I can't offend them. And I don't mean to offend people, but they take offense where I've never seen offense taken.
Yeah, for sure. It's everyone's always like a lot of times I feel like people are going just to look to be offended with something. They're not even looking to laugh. They are looking for you to trigger them. These people aren't happy. You can't.
Yeah.
I always tell people anyway, nowadays, if you do a comedy show and everyone loves you, you're doing it wrong. Because my best comedy is like you got the stage, you got a platform, you can be funny and also say something relevant.
Yeah.
You can also share like something real that people might not agree with, and that's fine. But if you got everyone laughing, to me, that means you're not talking about anything. You're just up there just pleasing the masses. And I'm not knocking those people that do that, but it's just not my style of stand-up.
Let's take that up on the other side. And if you have any comments here for Kevin or for me, give me a call.
People ask me for advice all the time. Like, oh, man, like, what age should you tell your kids that Santa doesn't exist? Here's an answer: when you can no longer afford their Christmas lists. It's not rocket science. Yeah, my son gave me his Christmas list. I was like, yeah, man, he ain't real. I'm sorry. This is a ridiculous list. What is wrong with you? We can go halvesies.
So,
Daddy could put something on it. You ridiculous list. My second kid came out.
You're listening to Kevin Bozeman, who's here.
Which is really creepy to me, just that we're sitting around listening to myself.
Is that really creepy
too? Because I do that when I'm in the car by myself. I just listen to my soothing voice.
Do you laugh when you listen to yourself?
No. Sometimes when I listen to myself, it's very critical.
Yeah. Well,
I listen with a very critical ear, and I'm like, why would you say it like that? Why didn't you pause longer?
Yeah.
Why didn't you?
But this brings me to my next segment. People think that you're the class clown. You go up there, you're funny, you're off the, you know, from the hip. Surely you play with the audience and you do that kind of stuff and you're able to interact. But you plan your stuff, don't you? It's pretty planned.
Yeah, you're right. Like, that's the one thing that I learned as a comic, as the more I did it, is like, you have to treat it like a real job. You got to put the work in. Like, you got to, you know, you're the writer, the director, the producer, the star. So you're everything. That's why it's so personal when it goes bad.
Right.
If a movie bombs, not my script, I didn't produce it, I was just reading someone else's lines, like the lighting was wrong, all these things, the cinematography was off. But if you fail at stand-up, it is a failure on you. It is you. Because who else do you have to blame? That's why it's so easy. Like, this crowd sucks. No. Sometimes it's just... sometimes you can be like, yeah, it's not a good crowd, but not five shows in a row. If you suck five shows in a row, it's you.
So... there's this idea that comedians are dark people, and some of the listeners of my show know that my father was a stand-up comic, and that's how he raised us as kids, and so I kind of was around it the whole time. My father wasn't a dark guy at all, but a lot of his friends really were. And is there something to be said for the darkness and the comedy kind of going together?
I find some of the best comedy comes from tragedy. It's true. It is true. Like, you think, look at how tortured Richard Pryor was.
Yeah.
Right? If you read his book, he was molested by an uncle, I believe. He was molested by an uncle. He's raised in a brothel. You see all these comics with drug problems.
Yes.
And they're just tortured souls. So, yeah, there is some darkness in comedy. I've seen it.
I think you could say that about authors, too. You know, authors, too.
Creative people in general. I mean, like, look at Nirvana and all the musicians. Look at the actors that killed themselves or because of depression and just not being able to overcome darkness. We just lost a stand-up comic, Brody Stevens,
yeah.
48 mm-hmm. years old. Just a great comic, a great guy. I've only met him a couple of times, but he's just a great dude. You wouldn't think, oh, that dude is going to kill himself eventually. You just don't see it, and you don't know it, and they don't know. I always try to tell people, like, when people are like, they're just weak. They think they're doing you a favor by killing themselves. They feel like they're a burden on you. That's why they're taking their life. They're not taking their life because I'm so good. I've achieved everything. There's no need for me to continue.
I also think the pain is so excruciating to them that we can't imagine what that is, but it's so excruciating that drive to live, which is the strongest drive we have.
Right.
Everything is about
your natural survival instinct.
That it goes out the window, and you have the people who have the world, you know.
I have a local comic, very funny, Marty DeRosa, is a big wrestling fan, and he's also has depression. He has a podcast called Wrestling with Depression.
Oh.
And I was on there and I was just like, look, man, I have bad days, but whatever my chemical balance is, I snap out of it. Like, I come around out of it. But I see, you could see where the darkness starts. You just come out of it.
Right.
But a lot of people don't come out of it.
Well, they don't see that there is a coming out of it.
It's right. Mm-hmm. They don't see it. They don't have that switch to just go, tomorrow will be better.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, I know this is hard to analyze comedy, and it's probably not, it's almost impossible. Like, you have these stories, like you have the three stories this week. We have Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, who was caught apparently buying sex acts in Florida. We have R. Yeah. Kelly, who was charged. And then we also have Jussie Smollett. So you have these things. And let's just say that, would you decide, let's say you're doing a show tomorrow, would you decide to do something on these topics, or would you stay away from them because they're so hot and so polarizing?
The only reason why I would stay away from it is because everyone is going to try to tackle it. So if I tackle it, I better have a take that I know no one else has.
Okay.
Right? So I do write about it. I write, sometimes things just don't make it out of my mouth, but it makes it on paper. But I do write about it, and then I look at it and I go, is this the quality I want to put out? It's like a restaurant. You're like, I grab a steak anywhere, but I'm putting out this quality because that's the reputation I have. So I always say all topics are on limits until they're not.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Not till you say it does it become off limits. It's nothing. It's nothing but words until you say it, and then the reaction, and that's when you know it's either off limits or on limits. So I treat it. Yeah, so like this is what everyone's talking about. This is kind of our job. We're supposed to make sense in a funny way of what's happening in our community. That's why, like, when comedy clubs are like, don't talk about politics, it makes people uncomfortable. And I'm here to make people uncomfortable.
And let's make some more people feel uncomfortable in the next half an hour. You're listening to Kevin Bozeman on the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
They're the biggest scam ever. They don't even try to hide it. They show you how they rip you off. That's infuriating. Because you can't call and complain, like, hey, we just want you to know, before you fly, we're going to rip you off. We're going to show you how to do it so you don't have any stupid questions later. They itemize it. They charge you $5 for a September 11 security fee. It's been almost 20 years since 9/11. That should come with the flight. I buy a plane ticket and you don't crash into a building.
Ha ha ha! I love it. I love it. Now, come on. That's something everyone thinks is funny, right? That is so funny. Why are we paying that? You're right. Now, how do you come up with that? You just, you're going through your day. You're on the airplane.
Because, you know, you look at, you see the flight and you see the price and then you purchase it. Then all of a sudden, the price changed dramatically right. with all the taxes and surcharges. And then you read it and you see that they charge. Like, the rest of that joke, like, to that point, the rest of that joke was like, I just feel like if you're ever on a plane and it gets hijacked, you got the right to stand up and be like, who didn't pay their $5, right? Somebody
you
must not have paid.
Therefore,
because we are getting hijacked right now, and I'm pretty sure we have to pay a $5 September 11th security fee. So, yeah, it's but that's the type of things I do. Like, I just talk about social issues. I talk about political issues. I talk about events that happen, and I want to have laugh, and I want to call into question some of the things that happen, and just being sarcastic and making fun of it is the way to do it.
Well, we had a texter who said, "I want to make people uncomfortable is a rude and arrogant statement." And I emailed back and said, "Why? You know, why would that be?" And he or she wrote back, "Maybe it's because I don't like stand up comedy. George Carlin was funny and silly without getting personal."
He was very personal.
I thought he was very personal.
He was the most personal. There is no one that did more things. They talked about more political, social issues than George Carlin. And he made people uncomfortable with some of the things he said because
he's calling out. He got a little bitter almost.
I think he was always bitter. I think that's probably why he never became like the mainstream movie star. He just basically, that's hard to do, you know? The Eddie Murphy's transitions, right. The Sinbad, the Seinfelds.
Tom Hanks, even. Yeah.
Yeah, they all transition into movies and everything. To just for 40 years writing stand-up and just being relevant and talking about social issues and stuff, that's a really hard thing to do. But that's what he was great at. He talked about things that we took for granted, and he showed the hypocrisy of things. And if you show people to be hypocrites, it makes you uncomfortable. It just does, because no one likes to be considered to be a hypocrite. And if you write a joke that shows the hypocrisy of society, it makes you uncomfortable. To your point, we were talking off air, like, we watch the things that's going to make us comfortable. If
right.
you are conservative, you watch Fox News. If you're liberal, you watch MSNBC. And where I follow everyone on Twitter. Everyone, whether I agree with them politically or not, because I'm looking for material, right? I'm
right.
looking for them to say
right.
something that just going to be it right or left to say something funny. I watch all the news stations because I'm gathering information. And plus, if I have a strong opinion, I already like to know what you think.
Right.
Right. I already know what I think. So I'm not arguing my point of view. I'm arguing the point of view you already think that you're about to. I already know you're going to say that. So I already have a response. That's just preparing yourself. Like, I don't get why argue? Like, I discuss things that I don't know. I argue things that I believe in.
Makes sense.
I do it on stage too. So when I say my jokes, sometimes people scream things out. I'm prepared.
Right. Yeah, right? Absolutely. I don't know. You know, I just do think people are very, very, very uncomfortable with things out of their comfort zone. And I think the comfort zone has gotten very, very small. And I just don't think I like it because, you know, some of these things. Okay, let me tell you an example. Now, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate text in this. I'm on Facebook and I'm scrolling down. And someone writes, what is it, National Blackface Month? ? Because all the blackface stuff was coming up.
Yeah.
And I had a little belly laugh. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I can't laugh at that. That's not appropriate. That is a racially insensitive quip. And then I look, it was an African-American guy who posted it. Then I go, okay, now it's okay.
Right.
But like, I even questioned, it was funny. I mean, we've had all these blackface incidents, and I'm not saying that that's funny, but it's funny that they're all in the same month, Black History Month.
I know.
It's funny.
This Black History Month has been inverted.
But it was a funny joke, and why shouldn't I laugh at that? I'm not laughing at it in a racist fashion. And when I know it's a black guy who told it, it was even funnier.
Yeah, it's better now. Wipe the bead of sweat off your head. All right, I'm still on the right path. Yeah, it's weird, like, because we have been everything. Everyone's walking on eggshells now, right? But if you, in a way, I kind of like that we're bottoming out in that
way.
Do
you think so?
Like, I feel like we're kind of bottoming out, and then like everything is just kind of imploding. And it's going to be fun to see what comes out of it. I'm not saying anything good is going to come out of it. Maybe it might be something bad, but I don't like the implosion. I guess it's coming. Yeah. It's coming. We've taken things, so many things, for granted. Like, and now it's we're just reaping it, like reaping the problems from it. And
yeah.
My job is, it's great for me, because the more problems we have, the more material and that I have,
right,
to make you uncomfortable.
Right. And yeah, and the more people want to laugh. You know,
yeah,
I think when things are down, that's what people want
to
do.
That's the best thing that happens to me, when people come up to me and say, I was having such a bad day, yep, or a bad week. This show made me feel so much better. Thank you. Thank you. Like, those are the best compliments.
Well, even the politics. If politics are getting you down these days for some reason or another, when you see comedy about it, and you see Saturday Night Live or whatever your comedy is, whatever side you're on, it does make it funnier. It makes it, it doesn't bring it to heart so strongly, where you can just go, all right, we're going to move on. We're going to have something different.
Yeah.
If you don't like what's happening now, it's going
to
change.
To that point, like, the key is to try to make fun of both sides, because I think both sides are laughable.
Right.
So why not make fun of both sides? And you can have strong points of view. And I think that's part of the problem, is people don't hold their politics accountable. So, like, you'll be like, that person did that, but your party did the exact same thing, but you don't notice, right, that. And don't, so if you don't hold yourself accountable, like, you can't appreciate, like, the tomfoolery that's going on. It's in my
on
job
both
is
sides.
Right. So
on
my job
sides, yeah,
is to write jokes about both things, so it makes it easier for you to laugh. It's just, that's rule number one of stand up. Before you make fun of others, you make fun of yourself.
Yes.
Right? If you make fun of yourself, if you just make fun of others, it's showing, oh, I'm better than you. And then people don't like a person that acts like they're better than them. But if you make fun of yourself and then make fun of others, and it's like, he made fun of himself first.
My
so
father,
okay,
said the same thing. You have to get the audience to like you very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, remember Don Rickles? He told those horribly, you know, offensive jokes.
Right.
If you go back and watch that stuff, you're like,
right,
oh my gosh. But he was so self-effacing, and he was, the way he did, he was almost apologetic when he delivered the line, that you didn't hate him. You kind of liked him, even though he was saying the
most. Yeah, you were
the
going
most,
there. You were sitting in the front row. I remember years ago, he did a, this is 15 years ago, he did a show in Chicago, and then he was doing the festival, Chicago Comedy Festival, and he walks out on stage, he goes, I can't believe I'm doing this for a lousy $100,000.
He's funny.
He's great.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about some really hot topics in Chicago.
Yes.
And we're going to get your quick read on a bunch of different things. So you're listening to The Karen Conti Show. I'm talking to Kevin Bozeman, one of the best stand-up comics ever in the history of Chicago.
There's nothing crazier than to love another human being. You don't believe me? Just listen to how people in love talk. It sounds crazy. I'll give you my heart, my mind, and my soul. Whoa, slow down, greedy. You get one of the three. I would argue that love is more psychotic than the word psychotic. Like, if you look on a crazy chart, be like, insanity, psychotic, love. Like, love make you slash tires and burn down people's houses. Exhibit A.
Welcome back to The Karen Conti Show. We're here with Kevin Bozeman, funny guy, Kevin Bozeman. Hey, Kevin, you've got an album. Let's hear about it.
Yes.
Do we call it albums now?
Yeah, it's still called album.
Okay.
I would love to have, like, a vinyl album of all my albums. Like, that would just be a nice little, just to have, like, vinyl albums and have them encased and hung up on the wall.
Behave yourself. Yeah. Christmas time's coming.
Yes. Santa, please. Yeah, man, he ain't real.
This is too expensive.
A vinyl album? Yeah, man, he ain't real. Yeah, but they're called comedy album. This is Two Parent Love, which is one of the title tracks of the album. It's based about talking about kids. It's talking about politics, talking about relationships. It's just one, like, like, it's weird because it's my fourth album, and I feel like all my albums just kind of show my evolution of stand up and how my delivery and timing has changed, which is great. I always tell people it's great to record an album because you get to see this is where I was at this stage of my life. Like my first album, most of those jokes, my first album was just called my first CD, a lot of those jokes are so, we're talking about so politically incorrect now, they wouldn't even fly. Like I couldn't even tell half of them. They would just offend people. It's 2005, but I still like, it's out there. Go out there and listen. I'm not shying away from it. I'm not apologizing. But I also know I can't do that anymore. That's the lesson. Like, I think that was the point that Kevin Hart kind of missed was like, look, man, that's what it was. That's how society was. Then we were allowed to make fun of stuff like that. I know I can't do that anymore and I don't do it anymore. So if you go through people's lives like that and just like, it's just,
you've got to reinvent yourself. Right.
You got to learn from things and just go, look, I was part of that process and now I know I've grown. So anyway, Two Parent Love is out. It came out a month ago. It's available on all streaming networks. You can get it on iTunes. You can get on Google Play. You can get it from Pandora, Tidal, whatever you stream. It's just, I feel like it's a good, like if you're working out or something, sit there.
And you work
on
clean.
A treadmill. I can work really clean. Some of my jokes are not, but some of them are really clean.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that you're more commercial, that way. I mean,
It really depends. It really depends on, like I put out a clean version and a regular version.
Okay.
So that's what I did. It's just words. And I tell comics all the time that they should always learn how to work clean because that's where money is at. TV money,
private parties. You want to do a convention. You want to
speak to corporations.
Yeah. Right,
like, right. I do church shows sometimes.
Sure.
Like, because I can work clean. That's where money is. If you just make yourself a one trick pony, then you're limiting yourself. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. You should always do what makes you happy. But yeah, this album, there's a cleaner version, which is available online called Collect Your Thoughts. And then the regular adult version, Two Parent Love, is out there. I would love if you guys grab it. Write a review.
Yeah, do that. Kevin Bozeman, check it out. Hey, can you wait? Can you come move into the 8 o'clock hour with us?
Of course.
Okay, because let's talk about Jussie during that time period. I want to talk, and I want to open up the phone lines to have people call and tell us what you're thinking about with these cases, these three cases that have been kind of talked about all week, the R. Kelly case and Jussie Smollett, and of course, Robert Kraft. But I want to ask you, I'm just going to throw out a news story, and I want to hear your random thoughts on this.
Okay.
The state of Oregon has proposed legislation that would lower the voting age to 16. It's going to go on a referendum, and they're going to vote on it, and then they're going to decide if their local elections are going to be allowing 16-year-olds to vote. What do you think?
I think that's consistent with this country about having, like, you tell people you can't drink at age 18, but you can go fight and kill for the country at age 18.
You can drive at 16? Right?
You can drive at 16, but I don't think you should vote. I like the age of once you're able to, like, I don't like the fact that you'd be 16 years old and you can disagree with your family politically and then be like, I'm going to vote this way. You're like, I'm paying for everything. You can't go and change the way I'm supporting you. I believe this politics is the way to best support you and you're undercutting me and you're living under my roof. I believe that once you're able to go and live out on your own, you should be able to vote. So I like the age of 18.
I see what you're saying. So you're cutting it off basically like once you can fend for yourself, then you have the right to vote for the elected people who are going to be providing for us or just giving us the laws that we have to abide by. That's interesting. And I think some of the young people, of course, the entitled young people, are saying that, listen, we get held to the standard in a criminal case. I can be 16 years old. I can be tried as an adult and thrown in jail for the rest of my life. So why shouldn't I? I don't know what
but that's different because that's a choice. You are choosing to do something bad, right? That's a different thing than having a right or choosing to do something bad. Having a right to vote. I do believe, though, everyone should just be born and have the right to vote. That should be just like you, they issue your birth certificate. Here's also your right to vote. And then you can do with it as you please, but you can have your right to vote. That shouldn't, we shouldn't have to register. That should just come with just part of being living in this country. You're born, here you are, you can vote. Here
well, and I don't know what the facts are, because I hear both sides. I hear very good evidence that people, there's a lot of voter fraud. I mean, people aren't lining up for voter fraud. People line up for fraud when it comes to a lot of other things, stealing cars or whatever. Yeah. But voting, it's not like people are making up stuff just to vote. I don't
believe it's not as with nothing that's ever shown to be concrete. They say it.
They say it, but I never seen it.
And it just kind of disappears. You say it when you're running for office. And then once the election is over with, it just kind of disappears. No one ever has a book or report that supports that theory.
Okay, here's the next story. The chicken is local, but was it happy? Now a GPS is going to tell the life story of your chicken. People are very curious about where their organic chicken comes from. So a Chinese company is going to keep track of 100,000 chickens with trackers. They're going to have sensors that upload their exercise information. It's going to have facial recognition of the chicken, so that when you eat your chicken, by the time you buy your chicken, you're going to know exactly where that chicken was, how it exercised, and how it met its
demise.
So
are you saying that the chicken comes with a little biography booklet?
Yes, I think so.
Hey, here's a story about Henry the chicken. Before you enjoy Henry, you might want to know that he likes to take long walks in the park. Oh my God. People are monsters.
He likes listening to Kevin Bosley.
He listens to Kevin Bosley too. Wait, that's why you're so happy when you eat this chicken, because he find the two pair of love was hilarious.
Can you even believe that? Is that going to catch on? I'm going to say no. That one's not going. You know?
No, but and how much are these chickens going to cost? $1,000 per chicken just to follow that person's
maybe
life?
The first time they never will KFC where everyone else goes.
This is kind of the time that people have.
Yeah.
Like there's some real problems. Why can't these people put this time into the Flint water supply?
Here we go.
Why can't we put energy into fixing water?
I like that idea. Hey, you're going to stick around. We're going to talk about Jesse a little bit.
Okay. For sure.
Back, it's Karen Conti. We decided to keep Kevin Bosman. I decided to keep him captive here. It's a very
comfortable captive state. It's very comfortable. Great scenic view. I love it.
I guess you can see out there. The view here is really lovely, and especially during the day when you can see into people's apartments. That's my favorite thing to do.
What's the creepiest thing you've seen in an apartment? Anything?
It's just people walking around doing things I don't understand, you know? and people don't understand that when they're inside and they're naked, you can see them. I mean, I don't understand why people don't get that.
Looking at maybe the history of their chicken, finding out what's going on in their life. Has anyone ever had chicken? It's like, this chicken just seems like it just was unhappy. This chicken was unhappy. I want happy chicken in my life.
Well, a chicken can't be too happy if it's dead, number one. And number two, I always think of my food. I don't think of my food as an animal that formerly was alive. Like, I don't like a fish with an eye. Just cut it off so I don't see scales, a tail, or an eye.
How do you know that the chicken, right, was like, no, it was coming. It was just like, you know, I've done everything in my life and I'm ready. I'm ready to be served.
Oh, you think like it's like going to chicken heaven?
Like a chicken is like, look, I did everything on my bucket list. Right, I had all this.
Don't say bucket to a chicken. Do not say bucket.
I did everything literally on my bucket list, and I'm ready to be in a bucket.
Colonel
Sanders, here I come. I've lived my life. It was a good life. Throw me in a bucket.
Oh my gosh. Give us a call here. I know we're going to be talking about some of the issues of the day, but if you have legal questions, feel free, and we'll give it some serious answers here. Now, just because we're kidding around doesn't mean I won't answer your legal questions. 312-981-7200. There's another news story here. Breakdancing might be in the Olympics. The organizers of the 2024 Olympics in Paris are considering breakdancing to be an Olympic sport. The Youth Olympics in Buenos Aires had the event, and the girls' competition was won by Japan, and the boys' competition was run by Russia, which brings up all kinds of interesting things about Japanese and Russian breakdancing. Mm-hmm. Also, surfing, skateboarding, and climbing might also be considered. What do you think? Breakdancing. What do you think?
I think it can only be an Olympic sport if they bring their own cardboard box to lay out on the street to do it. That's the only, it has to be from scratch. You can't have this comfortable floor. Like, right. That's part of breakdancing. It's to stay on that cardboard box. Because if right. you spin off and get on the concrete, that hurts. So they would lay the cardboard boxes down and then they would break dance on it. And that's the only way I would consider it an Olympic sport.
Do you like the idea? I think we should shake it up. I think I'm tired of all these old sports, the traditional sports.
No, I can't get enough of curling.
Curling is bizarre.
I love it. It's like I watch curling and it still gives me hope of being an Olympic athlete. Like, I'm like, oh, I thought I was washed up, but I feel like I could scrub a floor. I could scrub a floor, like, aggressively. I could aggressively scrub a floor for a medal.
Might you want to come over to my house?
For practice? Kev's here for some curling exercises here. I'm in.
I like shaking up. I like to see other things. I like to see people do crazy things here. All right. So apropos of absolutely positively nothing, all of these mayoral candidates are on the ballot, right? All of them. And we've got, I don't even remember the names of everyone, but who should be on the ballot that's not on the ballot, who you would vote for? Give this some thought. And if you have any comments, 981-7200, who would you like to see on the ballot? You can give me a funny answer, or you could give me a very serious answer. Who should be running for mayor of Chicago who's not already on the ticket?
Do you like all these candidates?
I don't like...
Not like per se. Do you like the fact that there are a lot of candidates?
I do, but I also know that I don't like a splintered vote. And actually, I argued...
What do you mean by splinter vote?
Well, we have too many people, and so there's not going to be a majority for sure. And if you only have 10% of people supporting one particular candidate, and that candidate ends up winning in a runoff, you've got someone whose people aren't behind. And
so
I like the idea.
Can't they change the game, though? Like, maybe have like a preliminary and then have elimination and then go, okay, now we're down to three. Like, almost
right.
Like. And then bring in Ryan Seacrest and then start eliminating marriage. Ooh, sorry, you didn't make it.
So sorry.
You didn't make this week.
Well, yes, and there will be a runoff, I believe, but I think that then not everybody's going to be behind those candidates. You know, it's kind of hard to switch and say, all right, Tony Preckwinkle didn't make it to the finals, but now I have to get behind Bill Daley and I really don't like him. That kind of thing.
It would be nice if people fought with respect so then you can move on to another person, but then they start slandering. That's what one of the things that tripped Hillary up was the Bernie Sanders Hillary thing. They fought so angrily against each other that those people couldn't transition over.
That's what
to
I mean.
Vote for Hillary, but that's just our culture. We're mean spirited people now. That's what society has taught us, like, to win at all costs. Win. Don't have like respect for your opponent. Dominate them, but you don't realize the effects, it's going, the ripple effects from it. So
totally agree, and you can't even.
I'm really smart.
I mean, do you want to tell everyone how smart you are?
No, I don't. I don't want to make people more uncomfortable than they are.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about Jussie Smollett.
Okay.
Did you know right away that this was a hoax? Did you suspect it? And weigh in here, 981-7200. I want to know if you have questions, if you have comments. Are you upset? Who are you upset with besides him?
When I heard it, I just went, because I've just been so desensitized to stuff. But when I looked at it, it was too perfect. It was too perfect of a crime. Like, who's walking around Chicago with Make America Great Again hats?
I haven't seen one.
I haven't seen one.
No.
I have not seen one.
Especially
on
a Nigerian.
Right.
I just haven't seen one on a Nigerian.
On a Nigerian. And like in downtown Chicago, that's just not... That's just not, those are the people that's getting jumped.
Right.
Those people are getting jumped, if you're being honest. If you're having a real conversation about it, the people that's wearing the Make America Great Again hats are the ones that's getting jumped. But I think, here's my take on the matter. I just feel like fame is a very powerful drug.
Yep.
Like chasing fame and fortune and stuff, you lose yourself. It is a very unnatural thing. The highs, the lows.
It's addictive.
Right. Where it's addictive. So addictive. Yeah. Like I said, it's a hell of a drug. And to think like that diabolical, to think that's worth it. For what was his end game?
But he already made it. He was already on the greatest show with everyone watching. He's making a lot of money.
There's clearly something we don't know exactly. And there's rumors. He was supposed to get written off the show. He wasn't happy with what he was getting paid. There was something did happen to him that was like a hate attack, but it wasn't taken serious. So he was like, I'll show you. There's something going on, but the end game was attention for him.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's what we can all agree
on. But it's interesting because people who get that addiction to fame think that any attention is good attention, and it's not. It's just
is
not. Famous and infamous the same.
Right?
Thing,
right? Are they the same? Is there a difference between the two right now?
I mean, who's going to hire him?
Somebody that's looking to have a villain, like, hey, we got this guy that already got built in a hate factor. He would be perfect for a hate role.
Well, you're the creative guy who would come up with that reality show or that sitcom.
I'm just saying, right? Yeah.
You'd have to do it.
I really need this somebody to hate him. Let's call Jesse.
Because right? Everyone hates him. You know, liberals hate him. Gay people hate him now. False claims.
I'm not sure conservatives hate him. I think conservatives.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I think conservatives are like, yep.
See, all
this is right.
Yeah.
All these people that's saying all this hate stuff is going on, it's not real. They're going to put that guy out there to say all of this stuff is just fake.
Well,
here's our proof.
And you're
right. They love him.
And you're right.
Conservatives love him.
Even the Me Too movement. It's like, see, people are making stuff up because we are in the time and place where people are going to be recognized.
Victims are suffering from from this mistake that he made. Like all victims from domestic abuse, sexual assault, they're all suffering because anybody that you question is just like, is this a Jussie Smollett situation?
Absolutely.
Right? He did
a disservice
to his community.
Yeah.
To his community, for sure.
You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. We're here with Kevin Bozeman, and we're going to continue on talking about current events, 981-7200. You're listening to WGN. Welcome back. It's Karen Conti here with Kevin Bozeman, stand-up comic, and talking about some of the issues in Chicago. Jussie Smollett, from a legal standpoint, interestingly, when you make a false police report, the charge is disorderly conduct, which is kind of a catch-all for all the bad things that people do that we don't have a name for. It's kind of interesting that it's under that catch-all. And, you know, he could do some jail time. My guess is he's probably not going to, or if he does, it's going to be a very short sentence. But, you know, it's... if I were his lawyer, I would have been out in front of this before it got to this point. Mm-hmm. And I would have just, you know, somehow got him into a situation where he came clean and he pled guilty to something. Because now that the prosecutors and the police are making statements about how outrageous it was what he did, caught the attention of the nation, in fact, I think that, you know, maybe a judge feels like he or she's going to need to put him in jail. To set an example.
And he's doubling down. He's not saying...
No, he's not.
He is still saying, this happened. I don't know where you guys get this. And now they're attacking the police force, right?
Right.
So he's not... He's a guy that's sitting at a poker table and you show him that you have a pair of aces, and he's like, nah, man, this jack two I got is a great hand. I'm going to play it out.
Yeah.
He's just playing it out.
Well, but, you know, they see this a lot in high-profile cases. You've seen this in the Michael Jackson case. You've seen it. You just, in any case where there's a celebrity, and politicians, the same thing.
Yeah.
They're so used to protecting their image that they're not paying attention to the fact that they could go to jail. And when you're a lawyer and you represent somebody that has an image issue, you have to have them back down on that. Because, listen, you know, it's bad to have your name out there being...
It's damage control.
Damage control.
Doing, right?
But listen, being in jail is worse than any of that.
Way,
you know,
worse.
Especially if you go to a bad place, you know. And so, you know, I think that the immediacy of a bad reputation...
Has anyone ever gone to prison for disorderly conduct, though?
Very rarely. Very, very rarely. It's just a catch-all. People do. I mean, yeah, people.
I mean, but,
Wrigley
yeah,
Field
like, right.
have been...
But you'll go to jail for the day, sleep it
right,
off, and then you
right.
pay a fine or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I mean...
I think his image is what's being crushed.
Well, it is, and it could be that a judge even says to himself, herself... Listen, this person's been punished enough. He's never going
right.
to work in the business again. And, you know, it goes both ways. I think the judges try to do the right thing, and they try not to put people in jail who are not going to do something again because they don't want people to be recidivists. On the other hand, this incarcerating him, would it deter other people from making false claims?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Here's my question. What do you think the punishment should be for people that make false claims like that? Things like, you know, this person sexually assaulted me and they clearly didn't sexual assault them. Or this person committed this crime and clearly didn't, or beat me and clearly didn't. What do you think that punishment, how do you deter that behavior?
That's a very, very good question, and I don't know the answer. If you go to the root of the problem, what's the root of the problem? What kind of person makes up that kind of stuff?
I mean,
you're talking about someone who's got some screws loose because normal people don't make this up. You know, I mean, I don't think people make up claims for the most part. I think that the Me Too movement backlash, and this is the stats have borne this out, people are less likely to believe accusers, female, you know, and any of these things. Now that we've had Me Too, with all the Me Too stuff, people are less likely, including women, to believe that women have been harassed, abused, raped, etc. So this has not been a good thing.
You know why? Because people have a hard time relating, putting themselves in that person's shoes.
Yes, they
always
they do.
Say, I would have just left. I would have never let that happen. I would have said no. I remember one time I was at a bar and a guy smacked my butt and I told him no. So you shouldn't say no. Like they put their own little spin on
it.
Because we don't, like we've just been saying, we don't want to know that there are some uncomfortable truths out there. As long as we keep living with our blinders on, we don't have to deal with these things that's bad. We just, because we don't want to deal with them, so we say they don't exist.
Well, and in that case, you're absolutely right. People will say, no one's ever bothered me at work, so it couldn't have happened. You know, I'm being a little facetious here, but the other thing is that, you know, you've got to be empathetic, because not every woman, not every person can stand up in the workplace. You've got student loans, you've got children to feed, and sometimes you just have to make do and get by and let things rub off your back because you need your next paycheck.
You're battling.
And you just don't know where a person is coming from. And again, it's true. It's a shame, and I think that... I think people should be prosecuted if they make up stuff. They absolutely should. I think prosecutors should, if they know they falsify charges and police falsify charges, I think they should be punished horrifically. When your life is never the same once you've been charged with a crime. I don't care if you're exonerated and the judge says you're the best guy in the world, I'm going to give you the Boy Scout Award, you're acquitted, your life is ruined.
A lot of times people... don't follow up. They just see that one headline and then that's it. They don't follow the rest of the story. They'll go, oh, this person did this. I see the headline, but they don't find out later if that person been exonerated.
Exactly. And they'll be like, that's not news.
Right. They'll be like, well, you know, I never liked him anyway. I believe he probably has done it some other place, somewhere else. It's just a matter.
It's exactly right. You're dirtied forever. Forever. We're going to get to your legal calls. I've got a couple of callers who are on hold. 981-7200. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. Karen Conti, this is the time that you can call in with your legal questions, although we've been kind of branching out and talking about other things here with Kevin Bozeman, the stand-up comic. But I've got some calls, and we're going to go to the lines, 981-7200. See if you can, if you have questions about family law, criminal law, estate planning, anything. I'll try to answer or guide you in the right direction. Ed, hi, welcome to WGN.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks for holding. What's your legal question?
It's not really a legal question. Well, it's partially is. We moved to Schererville, Indiana, and when we bought this house, we knew that the house across the street was rather dilapidated. It's an eyesore at best. It's not inhabitable. And we've been talking to the city about it, and constantly what we get is that the house is held up in probate, and they can't do anything about it. And I guess I'd like to understand from a legal perspective, what does that mean? I've got to believe this isn't all that uncommon. My understanding is the people that owned it had passed away. They do have some relatives in the area. They do absolutely minor, if something's falling off the house, they'll come and correct it. They don't keep the lawn up. There are raccoons and stuff living in the property. And I guess I just wanted to know, what happened to this piece of property from a legal perspective? I just don't understand what it means. Oh, it's hung up in probate.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to guess a little bit here.
And that's what I thought. Yeah. And that's perfectly good.
My educated guess is that so the people passed away. Maybe they had a will. Maybe they didn't have a will. But they didn't have a trust. A trust maybe would have avoided the whole idea of probate, which is what you want to do in an estate plan. So now it goes through the court system. Probate means that the court then gathers up the assets and will pay off the debts and distribute whatever monies there are to the beneficiaries. Probate is a long, drawn-out process. I don't know exactly what it's like in Schererville, but in Chicago it can take, I've got a case right now that I'm involved in, and it's been 8 years in probate. So it goes, I don't know what why it takes so long, and things just go forever and ever and ever. And so the problem is the beneficiaries aren't going to put money into the house because they may only be getting a portion of it. But somebody there, the executor, should be taking care of the house so the house has some value. I don't know if it's a teardown. I don't know if there's a mortgage, because the bank, if the bank has an interest in it, the bank should be taking care of it or making sure someone's taking care of it. So I don't know. You know what you can do? You can probably go down to the courthouse in Schererville and look and see. I don't know if their records are online, but I'm sure you know the name of the family, correct?
I do.
Okay. So plug that into the computer when you get there and pull up the file and see when it was filed, see who the beneficiaries are, see who the executor is, and see what information you can glean. If you feel that strongly about it, you can call the executor and say, listen, this is an eyesore. It's a danger to our neighborhood, whatever it is your concerns are, and ask what the game plan is and when is it going to be sold and when is it going to be distributed and who actually owns it, and see if you can get some answers. Yeah, I mean, the person may not want to talk to you about it. A little surprised that your city or your village won't do anything about it, because I assume that there are blight issues. And is it that bad where you would say that
it's going to fall down if they don't tear it down? And it is uninhabitable.
Okay.
No one has lived in the home. They bought it. Apparently the previous owners bought it. They had a bunch of properties. They had some money. And they bought it because it had like a 6-car garage and they used it for storage, and they didn't really live in the home. So it was already not kept up. And then when they passed away, no one's taking care of it. And so, I have talked to the city about it, and they said, yeah, we're trying to purchase the property and we'll tear it down and do something, but it's hung up in probate. And that's where my question, what does that mean? And what does that mean for a timeline? I did do some research, and it looks like all of this sort of transpired in 2014, so it's going on 5 years, but it sounds like from what you're telling me that this could go on for even a longer period of time.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna put you on hold and finish up the call, but thank you, Ed, and good luck to you. I it's one of those things where it's inexplicable why these things take so long, but they just do. And again, you know, you might want to find the name of somebody to give a call to. And Ed, if you want me to, I can try to make a call to somebody who's involved in the case. You would have to do that and get that information for me, but I would be happy to call the lawyer for the executor, or if you can get a name of someone who's involved where I can maybe just make a quick lawyer-to-lawyer call and say there were some concerns. And what is the estimated time of resolving the whole probate issue? Because at that point, when the proceeds are distributed, there will be a sale or a teardown. And Kevin Bozeman is going to weigh in without a law degree. Here we go.
Yeah. Well, only reason I'm weighing in is because I know that it's happened to some neighbors of mine where the house, people died and the house just went. I mean, it was bad. They wouldn't cut the lawn or
right.
anything. And I would just say the best way to do it, and you're putting it nicely, is you got to put some pressure on some people.
Yeah.
You got to make some phone. You got to, like, call them. They blow you off. Call back until they go, okay, we'll hire a lawn service. Anything.
Right.
Just start doing things to make it somewhat better, because if you don't, they won't, because they have no vested interest.
Yeah.
Like, why would somebody take care of something if they have no interest? It doesn't well, affect their house at all, right?
On the other hand, an executor, the person who's charged with being in charge of the estate, has a what we call fiduciary duty, which means you have a duty to treat the property of the estate, even if it's not yours, even if it's not going to ever go to you. I'm the executor. I've got to make sure that the assets are protected. I've got to make sure the bank accounts are in a high interest, you know, but not a risky investment. I need to make sure that the house has insurance on it and it's maintained so it doesn't fall down and it contain, you know, retains its value. So the executor here is not doing his or her job. And maybe the executor here has no ability to do it, but this guy's saying there were other properties and the family had money. I know Cherylville has some big, beautiful homes there, and it has some small homes, but there's mm-hmm. some gorgeous mansions there. So maybe it was one of those things they just couldn't take care of, and they don't want to take care of it, but their duty says that they have to.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, but it's really annoying when you're living in your house, keeping it up, and the one next door like looks like it's something from the Addams Family.
Anyway, hey, Ed, Karen and I are glad we could have helped you out right there. We're glad that we were able to put our minds together and help you out. Hopefully it works out for the best.
And if someone gets sued for malpractice, Bozeman, Bozeman. Hey, Kevin, you're on the road next week. I was looking at your schedule, which is actually on your website. You're doing stand-up comic, and you're going somewhere weird, like New Mexico.
Eastern New Mexico State Eastern. University. Dude,
wow.
It's so hard to get there. I can either fly into Lubbock, Texas, or fly into Albuquerque. Both are 2 to 3 hours away.
Oh my goodness.
So I have to fly. It's not a direct flight to, I'll fly to Dallas and then fly to Albuquerque. It's not fun.
Wow.
It's not my favorite.
You know, it's a glamorous life of a stand-up comic.
Is that what it is?
And then where you go after that?
And then I'm in Great Falls, Montana, Missoula, Montana, Sheridan, Wyoming, and Kenmare, North Dakota the following week.
Wow. Now,
the
what do
Kevin
you
Kevin Bozeman fun train doesn't stop. All aboard! Choo-choo! Who wants to go to mediocre towns?
But isn't it fun because, like, you find a good Applebee's, right?
I mean, oh, my
gosh.
That's
like fine dining, right?
I've eaten so good in so many neighborhoods.
That's really, it's hard, isn't it?
I've had so many riblet chicken finger baskets. I don't know what to do with myself. And a mudslide drink.
Are we talking about chickens again? We keep coming
back to chicken.
We keep coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I love, you know what I do? One of my favorite things to do is I do I go into town and I look to see if diners, drive-in and dives.
Oh, yeah.
Have been there.
Yeah.
And I try to go to those. To those places.
Those are probably at least good. Because when I did criminal work,
yeah.
I would have to go all around the state to the prisons because, of course, they couldn't come to us. So we'd have to go down there. But amazing, like those little towns. I mean, you'd have to find something you could eat, you know, because I'm kind of picky when it comes to food. And, you know, it's hard to find something decent.
I've become the power bar king.
Yeah,
the protein
right?
bars.
Yeah.
Like, water and protein bars is like what I've been living on.
When in doubt.
Yeah, for sure, because it's a quick snack. Otherwise, McDonald's and all, they're all there. Every exit, you can count on McDonald's, a Burger King, a Wendy's, and there's nothing good.
No, nothing good on
expressways.
Yeah. Oh, well, the glamorous life. We have one more segment. Call us if you have a legal question, and Kevin and I are going to really try hard to answer your question. 981-7200, you're listening to The Karen Conti Show. Okay, I'm getting a texter who says, why don't you talk about something serious? Okay.
I think an eyesore in Schererville, Indiana is serious.
That was serious.
You just have an ugly house, man. That's real talk. You go in somebody's, you driving and you see an ugly house just single-handedly depreciating the value of your home. That's serious, man.
And it's a danger.
It's a danger.
There could be like ghosts in there too.
And Karen and I put our minds together to come up with a solution for this, dude. One, an accomplished, multi-talented lawyer. Another, just a really smart dude dishing out some advice.
There we go.
Is that serious enough?
So you still take your calls, 981-7200. Let's go. I think we got another serious call. Let's go to the lines. Hi.
I said sarcasm there.
No. This is serious. I'm going to be serious. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Do you have a legal question? Hello. Ben, is she there? No? Yeah, now hit it. Okay, now I'm hitting it. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. My son did some work. He does like remodeling and painting. And he got half of his money up front, and then he finished everything, even did extra things and didn't charge, and the person won't pay him, and it's like $1,500, and so he doesn't have money, to get a lien, because I know that's a way to get it, but I'm wondering if there's any other way to get that person to pay.
Yeah, that's really hard because, it's not enough money to hire a lawyer. It's not enough money to put a mechanic's lien. A mechanic's lien is, for listeners who don't know what that is, if you do work on a house, you have a right to lien the property if you're not paid your full amount. And that puts a kind of a cloud on the title so that the person could not sell the house unless you satisfy that lien. It's just a hard one. I mean, you can have a lawyer send a letter and threaten to bring a lawsuit. He could bring a small claim suit in the county where the property is. He would go to the clerk's office, fill out a paperwork for breach of contract. The sheriff would serve him. There's usually a filing fee of maybe $100 or so, but then he's going to have to go to court and wait and probably go to court a couple of times and then testify. And those courts are generally pretty user-friendly. Is this Cook County, Wendy?
No, it's McHenry.
Okay. And that's a friendly courthouse, too. So he could do that. The problem with it is it takes up a lot of time. And if your son is a busy contractor, he probably would be better off just walking away from it. As much as $1,500 is a lot of money. I mean, I'd bend over and pick it up if it fell on the ground. So, And I don't, it's one of those things that's a risk in doing the construction work because, that's how you do it. You get some money up front and you get your last payment when there's satisfaction. And there's always going to be a customer who's not satisfied. But good luck. I hope it works out for you and your son.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye, Wendy. Bye. All right, let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan. Welcome to WGN. How are you? Hi, Dan. Oh, hi, Dan.
Probate, that kind of thing. Oh. Let's say an individual passes away, had a will, but before his death, when legally, had all the assets turned over to the sole heir. And I know this happens occasionally.
Okay. So turnover, meaning like the title to the house was signed over before he died. Yes.
Bank accounts, everything.
And if all of that was done and there are no assets to be probated or no assets in the trust or whatever the estate plan says, then everything is pretty much done and there's really nothing to do. Because there is no estate, because the estate's already been transferred.
Well, I was just thinking possibly the lawyers that made up that will might be saying, hey, there's a debt now. You know, we never, part of the deal was to execute. They have all these ways. I was just curious about that. Oh, you know what I'm saying? I
mean, no, the lawyers wouldn't have wouldn't have a right to have the will probated. And the only problem with doing that would be, like, if you're at the end of your life and maybe you're not all there mentally.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. That could be a problem, because maybe other beneficiaries or potential beneficiaries would come forward and say, listen, this was undue influence. You were not in your right mind. You were very sick. And all of a sudden, yes, you changed your plan and you turned it all over to one heir. And we're going to try to undo that. Now, can that be done? It can be. It costs a lot of money. But when people want to fight in family matters right like this, they tend to find a way to do that.
So, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the info.
All right. Take care. Okay. Marlene, welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
Well, thank you. I've been listening for a while now. My question is about work. Someone who has an alcohol problem has been off work for a number of weeks, and they want them to fill out short-term disability application, as well as have the doctor fill out that form. And is that considered, I don't know if that's called, family leave, you know, the technical term, but would he qualify under such a
yes.
Medical, yes.
So well, there's a bunch of different questions here. Can you go on short-term disability because of alcoholism or drug use? And the answer is yes. That is deemed to be an illness. And if you qualify, and the insurance carrier for that disability policy deems you to be impaired enough not to be able to work for a period of time, the insurance company will pay, you know, whatever the benefit is. And usually that's a portion of the salary. So it may be three quarters of the salary until the person goes back to work. If the person never recovers, they can put you on long-term disability, which is another deal. So yes, it can be. Is it Family Medical Leave Act? It could be. But basically, what the company is probably saying is, we don't want to pay family medical leave. We don't want to pay you. Go on short-term disability, and if you want to be rehired, maybe that person has to reapply.
Well, okay. They said that the job would be under guarantee if he does apply and is accepted,
Well, that sounds like a good resolution, because if you're being paid to get your treatment and you have a job waiting for you when you get back, that's a really good deal, even if you're not paid your entire salary. So,
okay, I just want to be sure that alcoholism is covered.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, it is. All right, thanks, Marley. Kevin Bozeman, tell people about your album and where they can get it.
Two Parent Love is out now, available on all streaming sites. Wherever you stream your music, you can stream my album, Two Parent Love, Kevin Bozeman, also available on iTunes and Google Play. And follow me on Instagram if you're into pictures, a way of communicating, at KB Stand Up Instagram. That's about it.
And then when you come into town, you're going to have to tell me, because I'll tell everyone we have to go see you.
I will certainly do so. Maybe this summer I will be performing in the Chicago area.
I can't wait. Dates and you might even up. Do something with Cochran, right? Something
in the fall with the always entertaining, super talented Steve Cochran.
He's fabulous.
For sure.
All right, sure. Kevin, thank you.
Thank you for having
me
so
much. And thank you for overextending your welcome.
Oh, I love that. I love not leaving when I'm supposed to. Oh, it's the best.